Welcome to the show. You are listening to The Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker, your host. Oh my goodness. You know, hey, it's another week. We've got a lot to talk about, as we do every week. Thanks last week to Congressman Mark Pocan that came on. If you wanted to hear that, check out the episode wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our social media pages, civicmedia.us. Everything's there, including this episode. And you're not going to want to miss it because our dear friend, the mouth of the South himself, Mr. Carlton Huffman, friend of the show, is back. What's up, dude?
Well, it feels like I age about 4 or 5 years between each appearance on this show.
I know.
Between all of the news and everything that we've had to digest. I mean, my Atlanta Braves go down, yep. Georgia beats Tennessee, but then falls to Alabama. So just on the sports side of things alone, it's a roller coaster. Never mind everything else going on in the country and the world.
Yes. Yeah, you got your Carolina Panthers shirt on for those of you that are tuning in from the radio. I was looking, you were here last, I think in July.
I believe so.
It's been a long 4 years, these last couple months. Ooh.
It doesn't seem to slow down. I mean, no. Before we really get into putting the screws to this administration, I mean, I do want to give them some plaudits, especially with the announced deal, getting the Israeli hostages that were taken on October 7th by Hamas out of Gaza and returning home to their families, and also ending this, hopefully, knock on wood, ending this horrible war in Gaza that has brought so much suffering to too many on both sides.
Well, you know, we could start there, too, because I wanted to talk about that. And it's, you know, if Trump was the one that brokered this, I mean, I do want to give him credit for that. You know, because I would credit where credit's due. With this show, we talk about how it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I think, you know, even the most stark critics can admit that that was a legitimate diplomatic achievement. You know, that's a huge deal.
Absolutely. And I think that Trump came into this term with a lot more leverage vis-a-vis Israel than Joe Biden had, because yes. Joe Biden was crippled in a political way from the beginning because you have a large segment of the Democrat Party, which is very sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. And while Joe Biden was very much sympathetic to Israel, gave them the weapons and the diplomatic support that they needed, he still had to hedge his bets a little bit on the public side of things. Whereas Trump, literally in the first term, he moved the embassy to Jerusalem. Yeah. He recognized Israel's 1967 territorial gains officially for the first time. And then also in this term, he bombed Iran. So yeah, that gave right. him tremendous leverage with the Israeli public to sit there and say, I've went to the mat for you. I've actually done something no other American president has done, and that is to put U.S. forces in the firing line alongside the Israelis as they were bombing Iran themselves. So that gave Trump enough leverage to sit there to tell Bibi, enough's enough, that if we get a deal, if Hamas says that they're going to release the hostages, you need to take that deal. But also, if Hamas refuses to take that deal, then we can basically say that they are not good faith actors and Israel can do what they need to do.
Right. I do think that to an extent there was a pretty rapidly closing window on that, however, too, because of all of the pressure from other international countries that are saying we are going to recognize a Palestinian state. So, you know, if Donald Trump was going to broker a deal, he had to do that quickly. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just think that there's so much that we could delve into on this, but I mean, the bottom line is that Hamas started this war. They are the ones that all the carnage is at their feet in mm-hmm. terms of the responsibility for it. We can sit there and say in an even-handed way that 2 years of war and over 60,000 Palestinian dead, I mean, a number of them were combatants, but far too many were civilians,
yeah.
that everybody on all sides of this can look at it and say, if we can get those Israeli hostages back, if we can return them home, and Hamas is going to no longer be firing rockets into Israel on a daily basis and attempting to carry out what their charter calls for, which is the elimination of the Jewish state, if we can get that deal locked in and people are actually going to participate in it, then all the better for everybody.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And one thing that's frustrating too is like, you know, you want, I want to give him credit and I want to say that that was a, because it was a good thing, but like in that stupid freaking post that went out where he, you know, he's like, oh, look at this, this is all caps, blessed are the peacemakers. And it's like, good freaking Lord, man. Like, you can't.
The people of Chicago and Portland would like to have a word when it comes to right? that.
But then it's like, okay, you want to quote scripture. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about where, you know, the Bible says if you're going to do a good deed, you do that good deed and you shut up about it and let the good deed stand on its own, but not like, don't break your back patting yourself on it. You know,
the Bible also says plenty about treating the migrant with dignity, treating them with kindness, treating the poor with kindness. And I don't think taking health care away from all the people that are on Obamacare plans and also taking $1 billion out of Medicaid, I don't see anything biblical in that. I can understand from a fiscal conservative side of things that you always want to sit there and make sure that a budget is balanced. But whenever you basically triple ICE's budget, whenever you give tax cuts to the top 1% in a way that is not fiscally responsible, you are showing where your priorities are. And so while we can give Trump credit on helping to foster this deal, and like I said, God willing, we get those Israeli hostages home and reunited with their families, that does not negate all the horrible things that are going on in the streets of Portland, in the streets of Chicago, where we're basically seeing things that we haven't seen since the Civil War, which is troops from other states going into political opposition's areas. And we've already seen American citizens shot by federal law enforcement. We have seen children dragged out of their homes and zip-tied in the middle of the night. And it's not slowing down. It's only getting worse.
Yeah, that whole pesky, we talked about it on last week's show, that posse comitatus thing, you know, where you can't, you know, send troops into a city, and that's what's happening. I struggle to there's so much behind this. And like you say, it's not getting better. Where does it end?
I could go very Black Hill on this one. I mean, I would say just look at your history book at 1861 is where some of this could end. And that's something that obviously I don't try to be hyperbolic, but let's just face facts. I want to say the last time I was on your show in the spring, I joked about Donald Trump. I shouldn't even say joked. I actually said I think that he would seriously seek a third term if he thought he could politically get away with it. And the very next week, he rolled out on his website Trump 2028 hats.
Right.
And you already have people along the political lines pushing the limit on every issue that we talked about with Project 2025. I just sit here and say that we are going to likely see a Kent State-like incident. And for those of your younger members of the audience, back during the Vietnam War, we had National Guard troops that were confronted with protesters at Kent State University, and the protesters were getting rowdy. They were throwing water bottles at the troops, and the troops fired into the crowd, and we had American kids dead on American soil at the hands of their fellow Americans. And that's something that I will sit here and say, and once again, people might get their guard up whenever I say it, but I truly think this White House wants that. I can remember whenever I worked with the Trump campaign in 2020, whenever you had the tear gassing of protesters on Lafayette Square, you had them fist bumping, thinking this was a great thing. They even had the poster picture of Trump walking across the square with his aides and General Mark Milley, and they thought it was a political home run. Fortunately, the politics of the day backfired on them. But they learned the wrong lesson from that. They think we did not go hard enough, and they are referring to American citizens as terrorists. And that's basically out of every authoritarian playbook. Whenever you can brand American citizens as outside of the political process, as outside of the constitutional protections that we are all entitled to, that's whenever you see things devolve very, very quickly, and we're seeing it on our streets already.
Do you think, you know, not necessarily he would run again. But, and I would it be out of the realm of possibility to kind of use some of these events? I mean, he never lets a good crisis go to waste to begin with, but could he say, well, with all of the violence in the streets, with everything that's happening, we're going to suspend the election. And, you know, we're because you can't run for three terms, but you can, in the case of wartime, you know, just kind of delay some things.
Well, let's look back at history on this one. I've got a historical argument on both sides of it. So even during the Civil War,
right,
while parts of the country were under the control of the Confederacy, we still had an election. Abraham Lincoln, even though it was looking like he might lose the 1864 election until the Union Army captured Atlanta, he still was going to face the political process and honor the political process no matter what. World War II, while we were in threat of a Japanese attack in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor during 1942, and we had American ships literally getting sunk off our shores by German U-boats, we still had a congressional election. We also, during the Vietnam War, even though there were riots in the streets in Chicago in 1968, even though you had presidential candidates killed, like Bobby Kennedy, we still had a presidential election. So there is zero argument to sit here and say that if we could get through a civil war and still have a functioning presidential election, there is no historical argument that justifies suspending an election. What I would say, though, I can remember in the lead up to the Civil War, a lot of the southern states basically left Abraham Lincoln off the ballot. He was not even there for people in the South to vote for because the southern legislatures did not recognize the Republican Party. If Republicans were willing to sit there and send false electors to Congress in the aftermath of the 2020 election, I can foresee a scenario where state legislatures, if you're seeing Greg Abbott in Texas rewrite the congressional map for Donald Trump in the middle of a cycle 5 years after a census, I can see him calling up these governors and saying, put me on the ballot and we'll let the courts figure it out.
Well, and you know, it's one thing to rewrite those districts, you know, but I think it's an entirely different thing to rewrite the districts for the express purpose of giving Donald Trump the seats. Like that's, you know, it's politics. I'm like, we have to do this. It's just, you know, the changing nature of the population. No. We want to give him more seats. Like, holy crap. You said the thing.
Yeah. Once again, I think I've said it before on this show. Power is the end goal. Like, it is not a balanced budget. It is not social conservative values getting enshrined into law, even though that is a side effect of it. It is power. It is total political power and the crushing of the left. You listen to Stephen Miller, who, once again, this is the guy who's the deputy chief of staff.
Yeah.
I mean, he is right there in the room with Trump making a lot of these decisions. You had the Attorney General of the United States basically indicting a former FBI director.
Right, and we're going to continue this discussion here with our dear friend Carlton Huffman. We're going to talk about what's the mood of the electorate? What do they think? Right after this on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network.